Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, good evening, good night to those who are listening, family, friends, well-wishers, and whoever else is on the line. This is Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness, and I am your host, Brother Rudolph Muhammad. And as usual, I'm joined by my lovely and intelligent, wise, witty co-host, Sister Lachelle Muhammad. Sister Lachelle?
Assalamu alaikum. How are you, family? How are you, Brother Rudolph?
I'm doing well. Praise the teacher, Allah. And, of course, we are here coming to you live from the Queendom. Queen, are you on the phone?
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum, dear family.
Yes. As usual,
yes,
again, we always open up with the greetings of peace and the paradise of assalamu alaikum, and we would be remiss in our duties if we did not give thanks, honor, and praise to the Almighty, All-Wise Creator, Allah, who granted us this time in order to do what we do again. So we thank Allah for coming in the person of Master Farag Muhammad. We thank him for raising up the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and we thank both of them for empowering, enlightening, educating, and setting on course and divine reminder in our midst today, the most perfect example of righteousness, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And to, in those three great names, we as a family of Muhammad greet you as the family in the greeting words of peace and of paradise of As-Salaamu Alaikum.
Wow, like As-Salaam, sir.
Yes, and we are unapologetically righteous. Yes, we are. We understand what else is going on in the world. We don't excuse it. We're not trying to excuse it. We hear it, but we are talking, teaching of the most honorable Elijah Muhammad, and everything that we deal with comes from those teachings and what we believe. So that's our disclaimer right now. So anyone that's listening, if there's a variant in what you believe, what you feel to be right in that, understand this is where we are coming from at this point for these next 2 months. When we're talking about disaster awareness for community preparedness, we are talking about speaking to the family and trying to get them on point and on task, because know that there are things coming down the pipe that are going to be devastating to us and that are going to be fatal to some of us. And we are trying to help you save your life and the lives of those that you love by taking heed and warning to these things that we are speaking about each week, and each week doing a little more prep and a little more preparedness than the week before. And if we just do that, then maybe, just maybe. Sister Michelle, would you like to open up with something?
Yes, sir. Of course, thanking Allah God for the opportunity once again to come to our family and to come to whoever is listening. You know, if you just kind of shuffling through the stations and say, let me just check this out, I want to make sure that I encourage you to stay with us for the full time so that you can get the full benefit of what Brother Rudolph and myself are going to share tonight. Keep in mind that nothing happens by coincidence. There's really no such thing as a coincidence. There's a such thing as synergy. When we line up with what God's will is for us and things seem to happen, we call it a coincidence because some of us have gotten so detached from the reality that God is always working, that when things happen, we say, oh, it's a coincidence. No, it's God working it out, and you realize it worked out, and we didn't know what else to call it. But we want to call it working in divine order. So you're not listening by accident. You're listening on purpose. You say, well, I didn't even mean to turn this on. You didn't mean to, but it was meant to be done by you. So you're listening in for a divine purpose, and that purpose is so that you will have the knowledge, some wisdom, some information that may not only save your life, but will save the life of someone that you love when you share it with them. You know, tomorrow when you're standing at the water cooler at work, standing around the coffee pot at work, and somebody said, well, what did you do last night? You can tell them, you know, I got some information that could very well save our lives. So what we're sharing with you, we encourage, we implore, we desire that you share with other people, because the disasters that we see are not going to just stay somewhere else. God is fair, and we will get our turn where we're the ones on the news if someone else is watching the disaster in our backyard. So thank you, Brother Rudolph. That's what I would start off with.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Now, this week, what we're going to continue from where we were last week, dealing with floods and the devastating effect that floods have, but more so the devastating effect that rain has, not just on the environment, on the atmosphere, but on the earth itself and on the very foundation of the building that we live in. Because everybody prayed. They wanted to get out of winter. They wanted the snow to stop. They want the snow to melt. They don't want the snow anymore. Okay, well, that's what's happening now. We're in the change of seasons now. And so the snow is going to begin, and the ice is going to begin to melt. And what you have to understand is that snow and ice is a volume of liquid. And that liquid now, when it melts, it has to go somewhere. So where is it going? 3/4 water and 1/4 land. Then it's going to increase the amount of liquid that is out there on the already overburdened land. So the land will absorb most of it, and naturally so, but it won't absorb all of it. So that which it does not absorb, it's going somewhere. The question is, where is it going to go? Now, think about where you live geographically. Do you live in an already flood zone? Do you live in a valley area? Do you live in a mountainous region, or are you living in a mountain or on the side of a mountain already? If the answer is yes to any of those, you are already in harm's way. And what you're going to need to do is, so some of this information we will be given, and try and implement it in your daily life so that you can try and lessen, or as we say, mitigate the disaster that is inevitable in your life. So let's open up with this, if we may. From our training manual, as we said, The Fall of America by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, chapter 37, page 161. And it reads as thus. The Holy Quran, chapter 13, ayat 41, see they not that we are visiting the land, curtailing it of it, and Allah pronounces a doom. There is no repeller of his decree, and he is swift in calling to account. And then at the bottom of the page, from the Bible, Psalm 10, verse 8, it says, he sitteth in the lurking places of the villages, in the secret places further, the innocent. His eyes are set against the poor. Well, the question is, who is that scripture talking about? And again, we're dealing with disaster awareness for community preparedness. But part of the disaster for us is ignorance. Part of the disaster for us is not where we are in the scripture. And part of the disaster for us is not understanding when the scripture is given that the scripture is prophetic and not historic. So again, who is this verse talking about? So I'll leave that for the listeners. You can go get your Bibles and you can read the verse before and the verse after and try and gain a perspective. But let's flip over now to page 162 and the last two paragraphs on page 162. But mainly now, this is historical in nature. talking about the Bidway Technical School. The Bidway Technical School came to us for help. Take a look at how they have turned on us for the purpose of wrecking all of the beautiful businesses set up for them and others to enjoy on the south side of Chicago, Illinois. Now, for those historians among us, just implores you to go and do a little research on history, current history, on the south side of Chicago to find out about the Bidway Technical School and exactly what he is talking about. Quran, Surah 81, Ayah 6, 7, and 12. And when the cities are set afire, and within are united, and when the hell is kindled. I'll stop there for now. If we are watching the news daily, and we are keeping abreast on current events, we see what is happening to the landmass of America, the erosion of the beaches and the beachfront and shoreline in the east. We see in the south how the land is also being eroded as the water is coming up further and further on the land. So, as it says, so no matter what region of America you're in, there is something going on with nature that is not making it comfortable for your existence there, and you're going to have to deal with it. The question is, how will you deal with it? So, listeners, you know how this works. If you're already on the line, then if you have a question, a comment, or concern, press the number one, and that's like raising your hand in the classroom, and then you can join in the discussion. But we want everyone to join in the discussion because this is not a monologue. It's not a lecture. This is supposed to be a discussion on disaster awareness for community prepared. Sister Michelle, you have anything to add?
I just wanted to make sure I gave a little shout-out acknowledgement to those who might be in the chat room. You can please feel free to add your question through the chat room, and our beautiful sister Queen Aziza will read your question to Brother Rudolph and or myself, and we will do our level best to give you good guidance. But as you were talking about, you know, the change in the weather, I was one of those people who was tired of the snow. And as you so appropriately mentioned, when the snow melts, it has to go somewhere. I remember growing up on the northwest side of Detroit, and where we grew up, when the snow would melt, the neighbors would have to take turns clearing the drains in the middle of the street. They literally go out and sweep it and clear it and make sure no debris got there. And even overnight, people would have to get up and go check it again, because if we didn't, we would wake up in the morning with water standing in the basement, because that water, if it wasn't going down the drain, it was going somewhere. And it ended up filling back up into our basement. So it was something that we grew up knowing, that once the snow melted, you know, instead of us saying yay, we kind of said ugh, because we knew we were going to spend the next few weeks cleaning out our basements of unwanted water and unsanitary water. So even if, you know, you don't have a flood in the sense where you got to get a boat out to save your family, just having that water in your basement, that standing water, is not safe. So we have to think of it on the smaller level and on the greater level with clearing that water. It was really very annoying, and it took a lot to sanitize the basement every time it happened. So when you talked about us wishing for the snow to go away, that was me. But there is another side to that. That was another side.
Yes, ma'am. Again, there is a difficulty factor and there is a disaster factor. And the water brings a couple of them. Once again, it erodes the foundations of everything. Roads, highways, bridges, the foundations of buildings. So everything gets affected by this water. And stagnant water also brings disease with it. Because if water is not constantly moving and it's sitting still, it's becoming stagnant. And in the stagnant water, the bacteria is growing and developing and multiplying. And then that bacteria can be transported from that incubator, so to speak, of that standing water through animals and other ways where now it becomes a hazard to you and I and a hazard to our physical health. When the atmosphere gets heavy with moisture, it's an unsanitary condition. Because again, bacteria thrives and loves to grow in moist, dark, warm environments. So the moisture in itself from the atmosphere is a great breeding ground for bacteria and for the insects. Now, again, springtime is coming, so the insects are coming. The birds are migrating back. Those creatures that were hibernating are waking up and coming out. They are hungry, and they're the flowers now are going to start blooming. So now you have your allergy season getting ready to kick off in full swing. Some of us who suffer from environmental or seasonal allergies, this is like one of the worst times for us because you have your ragweed, your tree pollen, your animal dander, everything is coming out now, and it's going to wreak havoc on us, and there's absolutely nothing we can do to stop it. We just have to learn to deal with it and try to manage it as effectively as possible. If there are any callers on the line or any questions in the chat room, Queen or Sister Lachelle, just feel free, interrupt me and just bring them right in. I don't want them to have to wait while I'm talking.
Yes, sir. We have some in the chat room. I just want to remind the listening audience that is joining us by telephone that if you have a question or a comment for Brother Rudolph or Sister Michelle, press 1 on your dial pad, and we'll happily take your question. And Brother Rudolph, Amy says, what can we expect going from winter to spring in the southern states?
Well, in the southern states, what you can expect is everything that I just said at that time. Hurricane season is about to start. With the warming of the weather, again, like I said, with the flowers and the flora beginning to come out or begin to bloom now, you have your environmental things that's going on, but now also things are growing. So you have your crops that possibly will start coming up, and with them, that's an ample source of food for the predators and those vermin, as well as the insects who just wreak havoc in a garden or on a farm. But also, they represent the transference of a lot of disease and F. Because a lot of the kids and a lot of the other smaller insects that travel in the fur of these other animals now have ample transportation and ample food supply, and now they're going to come closer and closer in contact with us as we merge and fit in living quarters. So the South, just like, you know, the East, just like the West, we're all facing the same things just about where the springtime is concerned and the new dawning of a, or the dawning of a new seed, and where things are beginning to grow and things are beginning to come alive again. So we're starting a new cycle of life, and with that new cycle of life comes, again, the disease and the pestilence. So we have to be on the lookout for that. And remember that this is a, this will be a different strand of disease and pestilence than of last year, because it's had time to mutate. It's had time to get used to some of the antibiotics that we use, some of the pesticides that we use on it. So it's had time to form barriers against them and to overcome them and become stronger and mutate against them. So those are some of the things we have to look out for. Sister Michelle, would you like to add to that?
Yes, sir, to your very comprehensive list. Thank you, Brother Rudolph, for always making me study hard, prepare hard, and work hard. You never leave any stone unturned. So I don't have to do much. But the little bit that I would add would be, well, one, a lot of our southern regions did have a winter this year. So there are some things that you're going to discover as the seasons begin to change because of the extra moisture, because of the snow that was in some places. You may say, well, the snow is gone. Yeah, it is, but there was an additional moisture that was unexpected, that's unseasonal, that's unusual for the southern part of the country. So because of that extra moisture, that could cause extra precipitation as the weather begins to change. So the hot days may be humid, more humid, because that extra moisture that's in the ground, that's in the air, that's in the buildings, the concrete, from that unexpected snow, from that unexpected cold snap that caused that icing that you didn't even see, that's going to affect the weather now as we get ready to change the seasons. So those are things that you have to be prepared for. You maybe didn't realize that little bit of moisture, you thought, oh, that wasn't much, that dusty, it may have affected the roof of your house. You won't realize that it was a problem with the roof till now as it begins to warm up. And then you hear these little pitter-patter of little feet over your head, and you don't have an attic, and you realize when that moisture hit the roof and now that it's dried out, you got a hole in the roof, and now there's a family of squirrels living inside your house with you. So there will be little things, even in the South, that will be different this spring, this summer, because of the cold snaps that hit the South and because of the snow and the extra moisture that happened during the winter season that affected the South this year. So those are things also that you have to be prepared for. Brother Rudolph?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much for bringing that perspective. As she so eloquently put, the root of your house, all of that heavy snow and ice that was laying on it for over the last 4, 5, 6, 7 months, that is definitely something that needs to be checked on. Your drainage system, will it be able to accommodate the volume of water or liquid that is going to be rushing through it now, again, with the melting of the snow and the ice? Do you have a sewage system where you live at, or are you using an alternative method of getting rid of that water. What is your sewage system like? Do you have a regular sewage system? Do you have a septic tank? What is it that you have? And how are you prepared to deal with a malfunction in that system? Because, again, a malfunction in your sewage system is a great health hazard all around, all across the board. It is a health hazard for you, for the animals, health hazard for the environment, and it's definitely a health hazard for the direct area that it's in, and it's going to take a lot of disinfectant and decontamination to clean it up and make it inhabitable for you to be there after it's done. So,
Oh my goodness, that was such an excellent point. That septic tank piece. I forgot about the septic tanks down south. Definitely, that's an excellent, oh my goodness, excellent point. Everyone, make sure you get your septic tank checked as the weather is breaking. Thank you, Brother Rudolph. Always on point.
Well, praise be to Allah. No, I just do a lot of studying just before I come in to make it sound like. Now is the time for the drain cleaner. So, hey, look, people, listen up. Here's the job for all you entrepreneurs. People are going to need their gutters and their drains cleaned now. People are going to need, like as we said earlier, those septic tanks done. People are going to need gardening work done. Now is the time to polish up your green thumb, get your pit wader boots, and get out there and do for those who do that kind of work for themselves or cannot do that kind of work for themselves or just don't know. I will say this, for those who live in areas where you have like a Home Depot, Lowe's, that type of store, they constantly have beginner training classes on just about everything dealing with home, gardening, house improvement, things of that nature. So you don't have to be a handyman per se. You just have to be intelligent enough to know to go to somebody who does know and learn what you can. And it helps to help prevent disastrous conditions when you can do a little bit of maintenance beforehand. So these are just some other things that we need to think about and keep track of. Okay, let's, are there any other questions in the chat room? Any callers on the line?
Yes, sir, okay. We do have some more questions in the chat room. We have a question from Vivian. She said, I heard all of my life that the south coastal states would end up underwater. How realistic is that?
I want to answer that in a way where everyone that's listening understands exactly where I'm coming from without being facetious or sarcastic.
All right.
How realistic is it that here in America, after about 5 or 6 or maybe 7 p.m., it gets dark? Just as realistic as you have about 12 hours of daylight and then that's followed by 12 hours of nighttime, it's just that realistic. And it's that realistic because, again, as I stated when we started, the earth is approximately three quarters water and one quarter land. And with those big, you constantly hear them talking about global warming. The global warming effect is causing the melting of the polar caps and the melting of the big glaciers. And as those things melt, it's adding volume to our oceans and our seas, which carries over to the lakes and the rivers, which carries over to high tides on the beaches, to flooding of local or of low-lying areas. So we're talking about not something that may happen overnight, but we're talking about a system that has been going on ever since the planet was here. So now the question is, how realistic is it that you will see it in your lifetime? Well, the simple way to judge that is, the good part about it is all of this information is public knowledge. So you can go on your local state website and you can see, if you're living in one of those areas, you can see what the erosion of the land has been over the past couple of years and how fast it's going. You can see what the level of the tide has been and how it's changed. You can see how much land mass has been lost due to water or flooding. And you can see how often and prevalent the floods have been in those areas over a period of years. All of that information, again, it's a public knowledge. All you have to do is go on the World Wide Web, www, type in your state address, .gov, and then in the search engine, put your question, and you will get some information to answer your question. Michelle?
Yes, sir. Definitely. I agree with Brother Rudolph 1,000%. Do your own research, because you know what part of the country is most important to you, where your family are, where your concerns are. In different parts of the country, we'll have different results. We know what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us about California, for instance. We know what we've been taught. We know what the divine chastisement will be. But you have to do some research, especially when you're talking about here and now. As Brother Minister Murray said, that here and that now. If you want to know what's going to happen this year where you are, another place I would suggest is a farmer's almanac. It'll show you trends, where you can look at the trends, and it'll give you a forecast. You know, it's just a forecast. It's not actual fact. You know, you can watch the news every day, and Doppler 7000 will tell you it's going to be a sunny day, and you every all day long you're mad because you didn't bring your umbrella. So it's just a forecast. But it's generally, they're pretty accurate because they look at this over time and look ahead at the trends of the weather, where the sun is, where the moon is, because the moon has a great effect on the water. That's real. That's not metaphysics. That's actual science. So where the moon is placed, you know, affects the tide. So that affects the water as well. So all of those things. But I would say, I would add to the wonderful list of our wonderful brother, knowledgeable Brother Rudolph, I would say Farmer's Almanac as well. Brother Rudolph.
Thank you so much. Yes, ma'am. That is another great resource for all of us to look at and to study. The Farmer's Almanac. Okay. Any other questions in the chat room?
Yes, sir. And I want to remind the listening audience, if you're on the phones, because there's a lot of y'all on the phones, we want to hear from you. So please ask your questions and press 1 on your dial pad, and we will take your questions because we would love to hear your wonderful voices. Okay, we have a question from Christopher. And Christopher is asking a question on behalf of his spouse, and he wants to know, even though it's unrelated to the topic, I guess they are seeking your medical wisdom, Brother Rudolph and Sister Michelle. He says, can you tell me, is there a natural way to relieve menstrual cramps? My wife has them severely.
Okay. I am going to, exercise right now and show, I want to show all the men that are on the line, all the brothers, I want to show you how you can use your God-given common sense and use your God sense, and you can deflect, defer, and acquiesce to the other side of your God power, that co-creator and that healthy that God gave us, to answer that which is germane to her part of the planet Earth that we really can only speculate on. So, Sister LaSalle,
back to
your question.
I'm so blessed in this moment to also have a sister on the line with me. So I would definitely want Sister Queen to chime in as well. But one of the things I want to say first off is, you know, all praise is due to Allah, a mighty God, for a brother who cared enough about his wife's cramps to place the question on the call. That is a beautiful thing. Previously being a married woman, my ex-husband would have could have cared less. And that was like my own problem. So I definitely want to acknowledge you, brother, for you bringing that question forward. That's very, very beautiful of you, because menstrual cramps for some sisters can be absolutely, completely debilitating. You know, some sisters can't even get out of the bed, and that's real. And other women have their cramps, and they deal with it, and most of us fall somewhere in between. We have those, you know, times when the cramps is heavy enough to stop you in motion. You know, you're walking and you have to stop and say, woo, and acknowledge that cramp, and you can't even move forward. And there are other times where, you know, that time comes and goes almost unnoticed as far as cramps are concerned. One of the things that I know to be, you know, very successful is the hot water bottle. Hot water bottle is an awesome friend when during that time, the water issue, you know, because the fluids are filling in the uterus area, and having that water bottle on the external is kind of almost like a fake osmosis trick, where your body starts drawing towards that water bottle, and it does help too to relieve the cramps. Now, I've heard some sisters try acupuncture, and so that works for them. You know, I have not done acupuncture. Another thing that I know, other than the water bottle, that's tried and true, that works like a charm. You may not feel like doing it in the time frame, but if you clock your cycle well, you know, some sisters can't because they're irregular. But for those who are a little more regular, if you clock it well, if you work out leading up to, you know, your cycle vigorously, if you do a little harder workout on those few days just before your cycle, that also will relieve your cramps during your cycle. It might sound strange. You might say, the last thing I have energy for those few days before, Sister Michelle, while I'm going through PMS, ripping the paint off the walls of my home, is, yep, and go hit the gym. But go hit the gym. So go walk. Whatever you do for exercise, if you do yoga, you know, really do your downward facing dog. Do some extra, you know, the more strenuous moves, because the more that you do on the front end, it does help relieve. That's another good way to help relieve. And, you know, one thing that, and I'm going to send it to Sister Queen after I make this third point. These are my top three, not my only three, but my top three, and I'm going to tag team off my sister after this, is most black people, we don't realize it, but we suffer from dehydration. We don't realize we're not well hydrated. I mean, I don't know if it's the poor quality of the water, so I would also suggest going to have yourself tested and get your alkaline water. Don't just go buy alkaline water. Get yourself tested by a trained homeopathic person. And then after they say test your alkaline levels, buy your alkaline water. You and your husband and all six children don't get the same level of alkaline water. So go get the water that's perfect for you. Drink more water. We're drinking coffee. We're drinking juice. We're drinking Gatorade, and we're not drinking enough water. You know, and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us, and it's much cheaper and it's real, boil your water. So you boil that water, you strain that water, you could drink that same water that you get out the tap after boiling it. Drink more water. A lot of us are dehydrated, and that also leads to cramping. And I found that so even with my leg, getting leg cramps.
because I was dehydrated. I was in such terrible pain, and I called my favorite nurse, Brother Rudolph, and he told me, he said, how much water have you drank today, Sister Lucille? I'm like, I'm not talking about that. I'm in pain. Fix this. And he said, go get some water. Start drinking some water. Start eating some bananas. And I did, I mean, the pain relieved, you know, within like 20, 30 minutes, because I don't like to take medication. I'm not taking Midol. I'm not taking Advil. I'm not taking, if I take medication, the world has stopped spinning on its axis, or I'm near death. So those are the three, my top three advice, and I shoot it over to my beautiful sister, Sister Queen Aziza. What would you suggest to a sister for her cramps?
Well, it's kind of hard to come behind all that, Sister Lachelle. Of course, your potassium intake and, of course, your water intake is very significant. But what I would first suggest is that if the cramps have been chronic for a number of years, and if you are not following up with your annuals, then she might want to be examined to see if she may have fibroids, or she could have cysts or something on her ovaries that at that time of the month will aggravate that area and cause her to have cramps. But definitely water, definitely potassium, and if there is nothing wrong and she's just a person who is more prone to cramps, then what I suggest is a tea with nutmeg, because nutmeg is really kind of a natural kind of pain medicine, whether you know it or not. If you use it correctly, it's not something that you use on a regular basis. But if she would drink one cup of tea during her cycle with some nutmeg and maybe some ginger and honey, that will kind of help relieve the cramps. But since you say they are severe, the first thing I would do is have her examined for fibroids or any kind of foreign growths that may be on her ovaries or in her uterine area. And that's my suggestion.
So thank you, sister. Very excellent suggestions. And one thing I didn't know about fibroids, when I found myself plagued with them by Allah's permission, Allah reversed that condition for me. My doctor told me, and I didn't even know this was possible, my midwife, when I delivered my second son, she said because I had a C-section with my first son, that the way they do the C-section can create fibroids. I didn't even know that. So if the doctor is not skilled, you know, he could be skilled, he makes a mistake. If you get a nick, like if you've had a baby, and then your cramps get worse, because it should go the other way around. If you have a child, your cramps should lessen. Your cramps get worse after a child. You could have the fibroids, could have been developed through a cesarean or through an error, you know, or a mistake or a nick during the birth, because sometimes even if you have a natural birth, they may have to use the scalpel a little bit, and it can create a fibroid. So excellent point, Sister Queen. See, thank you, Queen, for chiming in.
All praise is due to Allah. Thank you, ma'am. And I pray that, Brother Christopher, that your wife gets better. Okay, we have a question
well,
from Joseph.
Well, at least she got a hitter in her corner. I'm just proud to know it's a brother out there. I'm telling you, brother, you don't know how much that warmed my heart to know that a brother would care that much about his wife, that he would log into a blog talk show and ask on her behalf about her cramps. May Allah bless you and your wife continuously to have many years of joy together. And I ask Allah right now in this moment to help relieve our sister's menstrual cramps and to bless her husband for caring that much. May Allah bless you both.
That's right. That's what a black God does. He cares for
That's
his
right.
woman. And the maintaining of a woman is more than paying the bills. So you have to maintain that woman on all levels.
You're about to make me justify. That brother just hit all in that area for me. You know, that's just beautiful when your husband cares for you for real, for real. That's for real care. That's beyond, you know, what somebody else can see. You know, you can see the brother put his wife in a nice car, and the other man would be like, oh, that's a good husband. Other women would be like, sister, you're so blessed. You know, your husband put your nice ring on your finger. Oh, that's so beautiful. But for a brother to be concerned about something no one else would know, I'm telling you, praise be to Allah. There's nothing like the black God.
That's right. Nothing like the black man, and we thank Allah for him. And I don't care what nobody say. I don't care who tries to tear you down. It is on your backs that this nation was built, and you are the true God of this earth. So don't let anyone take that away from you.
Okay. No, that's right. That's
we got
real.
A question from Joseph, and he wants to know, what do you do when you are bitten by a snake? Okay. All right.
Oh, I wish he had said what kind of snake. That would have made it a little easier.
Well, definitely, if it's poison, you need to be concerned.
Brother Rudolph, what would you suggest to your brother who been snake bit? And we're assuming he means by something that slithered on the ground and not another human being. So true snake bite, what would you suggest, Brother Rudolph? Let's go poison it first.
Okay, all right. Hold on. For all of the fellas that were in the chat room that was on the line and that was, you know, involved in that last segment, you can come back from the TV. UConn, they won. The game is over. You know, but that was our chance to, like, get away from the call so that the system could go.
Should we post in the chat room? You can come off mute now. You can listen again.
Yes.
I'll type the message in to let them know that it's safe to come back.
Well,
oh, my goodness.
The clap call is over.
Yeah, because we just went on a commercial break. We just went on a commercial break at that. All right. A snake bite. Like you said, yeah, let's deal with poisonous first. How do you know if you were bit by a poisonous snake? You know, Uncle Elijah Muhammad said that most of us can't tell the difference between a poisonous snake from a non-poisonous snake, so it's just best to stay away from all of them.
That's right.
In the event that you've already been bit by it, what you want to do is, now, it depends on where you have been bit on an extremity. One, you want to keep that area lower than your heart. That's the first. Two, you want to tie a constricting band around that area in between the area that you were bit and the joint that's closest to it, a constricting band. Simply for the reasons of slowing down the flow of blood. Next, you don't want to aggravate, elevate, massage, or move that area if you do not have to. You want to keep it as immobile as possible. You don't want to put anything on it. And you want to get to a medical facility ASAP in the very rural area that you pick up the phone and you call, and they can talk you through a medical procedure on the phone until help arrives. But again, it all depends on what type of snake this was that bit you, what time we're talking about and what time you may have. The calmer you keep yourself, the slower you can make your circulatory system, the more time you're going to buy yourself. That's definite and for sure. Now, I know everybody is thinking right now about those movies they saw where the person takes the knife and they put the X cut directly over the two fang marks, and they open up the skin and they begin sucking the poison out, spitting it out, and then putting some kind of antibiotic or something directly on, you know, to disinfect it, you know, as you see in the movie. That's Hollywood. That's what I want to say to that. That's Hollywood. if you don't know what you're doing, then you don't want to even mess with it. If it's a non-poisonous snake, everything that I just said to do for a poisonous snake will work for the non-poisonous snake as well. Call 911 or the local emergency, activate the emergency medical activation number in your area, because it's not always 911. But wherever the emergency medical activation code is in your area, activate as soon as possible. Keep the person as calm as possible and monitor them and just be ready to do whatever they tell you on the phone is going to need to be done until help arrives. On the other side to that, what I will tell you now is go take a first aid course. If you're in an area that snake bites are a prevalent thing, then go to your local first responder, volunteer ambulance, fire department, Red Cross, whatever is there, and take a course on snake. Go on YouTube and look at snake bites. Go on the www.snakebitefirstaid.com and look at some of your wilderness survival techniques. Learn what you can for yourself, and then what you don't understand or if you want it more clarification, then reach out to the professional. But that's what you can do on the other side. That's the best way I can answer that question. This is Michelle. It's Quinn.
I'm just glad that you covered the point about sucking the venom out. That is such the worst advice to give anyone to ever do, to ever cut into somebody because they have poison in them for any reason. You want to be very careful when you decide to cut into someone in a non-sterile environment, because I'm assuming it wouldn't be a sterile environment if it was snakes running around biting people. So that's something you never want to do. I'm glad that you addressed that. I was thinking it's so loud that I was surprised you didn't say, Sister Michelle, I heard you. Because that is what people think to do, is to suck it out. It's poison. You don't want to ingest it either, but you definitely want to be sounding the alarm as soon as possible. You want to call whatever emergency provider that's available. And a lot of times, even on those walking trails, you know, that are designed for tourism, they'll have those flashing lights. You know, it seems like you're just out in the wilderness, but some big brother is watching. And you can go over to those poles with the flashing light and hit the alarm where help will come. And don't be out places where there's no help. Now, why would you just go somewhere where there's no help, no one can get to you, your phone service doesn't work? Make sure you always let someone know where you're going. If you're going on a hike and that's...
We're losing you, Sister Michelle. Can you hear us?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you. Fine. You can't hear me? I'm sorry.
I can hear you now, Lil.
Know where you are.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. The only reason that I stress that part about sucking up the poison out is because, again, I'm a veteran, and there are a lot of military vets out there, as well as a lot of wilderness survivalists that are out there, who are trained in different things. So I was not talking to those that are trained. I'm talking to the novice. I'm talking to the John and Jane Q. Public. I'm talking to those individuals who do not deal with this on a regular basis. Don't try something that you've seen on TV thinking that it's going to work. What the TLC says, don't go chasing waterfalls, stick to the rivers and the lakes that you're used to. Yeah, well, stay in your lane and deal with that which you have a comprehensive knowledge of, lest you make an error and be sorry for what you've done.
Yes, sir, absolutely. And, you know, I don't know about, you know, rattlesnakes. You know, all rattlesnakes are poisonous, but I do want to share that, you know, something we learned very early, and I think it says red and yellow, killer fellow, red and black, friend of Jack. So a red and yellow coral snake is definitely poisonous, and a black snake is not poisonous, but you just don't want to be bit, period, because when you panic, you might not see the snake anymore, so you don't know whether or not, you know, the colors were actually correct because it's, you know, all happened so fast. So I just wanted to add, Brother Rudolph, if you don't mind, that if you are in a high grass area, a heavily wooded area, if you can get the hiking boot style shoe, as well as thick jeans or thick khaki pants, so that those teeth of those snakes will not penetrate the skin necessarily. Just protect yourself as much as possible. And I know sometimes when you're hiking, you don't want to overheat, but it's better to have on enough clothes that will protect you from not just snakes, but poisonous spiders. If you're going into tropical areas, like down in Belize, they have poisonous frogs that will get on your skin. And so you want to protect yourself in those areas that you know are filled with, you know, creatures of the wild that you don't encounter on a daily basis. So the first line of defense is to really dress appropriately. I know sometimes you see on television where they're hiking in shorts and, you know, they think that that's the gear and that's the attire, but it's not. It is so not the attire when you're out there with mosquitoes big as your hand and everything is crawling and... Trust me, it's just not. So cover yourself is the best line of defense. And then before you venture out, get some first aid training, get familiar with snakes and venoms, and know what has an anti-venom and what does not, and know what is prone to be in the area. I think that's the best form of prevention and preparation. I just want to add that, Brother Rudolph. Thank you.
No, ma'am. You're 100%, 1,000% correct. With the reason that you see in the military, you see them wearing the high boots, and then they have the pants tucked in the boots, and they blouse them at the end, is to make it puffy out there, so in case something does snag at them or bite them, it bites into the material and doesn't necessarily get their skin because the clothes is not skin tight on them. There's enough give there that when they bite it, it catches the material and not the skin. And so that, and like you said, that's another thing. Protect your skin at all costs. If you're going into the woods, into those areas, you do want to make sure that you have on appropriate clothing for the environment that you're in. And if you know that you're going on a hiking expedition, camping, something like that, do a little intel before you go and know the animals and the reptiles and natives to that environment. And, you know, you can always find out from someone that is germane to that area, because any trails or whatever you go on, there's always someone there, park rangers or people like that, you know, that live out there or work out there that can give you a good body of knowledge or information as to what to stay away from, what to beware, you know, and the do's and don'ts, so to speak, of that area. So, but if you're just caught out somewhere, that's something totally different. So that's very...
All right,
very good.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Brother Rudolph.
No, that's what I was asking, if we had more questions,
yes, ma'am? Yeah, but before I ask the question, I'm going to be talking about Chicago, New York, L.A., Washington, D.C., San Antonio, Texas, Houston, Texas. I'm trying to get these zip codes, these area codes right. North Carolina, Indiana, all of y'all on the phone and all these other area codes, I don't know. Please, we want to hear from you, and I know you have to have some questions pertaining to the safety of yourself and of your family. So please press one on your dial pad, and I know those brothers and sisters on the East Coast are certainly not shy, so come on, New York. I know Brother Rudolph would love to hear from you. Okay, we have a question from Sister Annette. Annette wants to know natural remedies for high blood pressure.
Okay, before I answer that one, yes, I'm going to chime in on what you just said, Queen. All right, if you call us from the 718, the 518, the 516, the 347, the 646, the 973,
yeah,
the 770, hold on, let me just look at the 843, the 914,
yep,
the 212.
Got some of them.
Press that number one and talk less to me. Okay. Natural remedies for high blood pressure.
I'm sorry. I don't know what this game is that you and Queen are playing, but I'm not having it at all. If
okay,
you're from
all
the
right.
313, the 517, the 810, I can't believe y'all tried to play with me like this here. If you're from the 248, I want you to call in. Don't let them do us like this, Detroit. Don't let them play us like this, Lansing. Don't let them get away with this foolishness. Don't let them do it, Easton. Make sure that they recognize that a guy came to the 313, the 519. I mean, come on, talk to me, 586. You can call in 2734 and back again 313. Now go ahead with your natural remedies for blood pressure. I'm going to leapfrog you and say garlic. Garlic is a wonderful natural remedy for blood pressure. Back to you, 347. I don't know what y'all going to know about the bread.
Thank
you.
It's about
9 from Michigan area, so. And they quiet, too. Yeah.
Hey, Detroit, well, thank you for not letting me down, Michigan number one. Y'all pray too much.
As Sister Estelle said, garlic is the first on the list. And we're talking about natural garlic, not garlic powder, not, processed garlic, natural bulb garlic. However you do it, crush it, slice it, dice it, chop it, chew it, swallow it, take a clove of garlic a day and chew it up and swallow it. It's good for you. It will naturally help to lower your blood pressure. Now, here's the other thing that you got to remember about garlic. Garlic will also thin out your blood. And that's one of the reasons that it will lower your blood pressure because it's thinning out your blood. So
and your breath is stinking. It keep people away from you, and that'll keep your blood pressure down.
Yeah, that's true. Keep people out of the face. That will keep your blood pressure down. Yeah, keep them away from you.
Oh, really?
Okay.
I'm with you, Brother Rudolph. You got me cutting out. I'm through with you.
Wow.
And you know, I want to add this. You know, a lot of people, it depends on what the situation is. If you're a person who suffers with chronic pain, pain will elevate your blood pressure. So you need to find out first why your blood pressure is up. If you are highly stressed, if you're a very emotional person, that could elevate your blood pressure. If you're just a person who suffers with chronic blood pressure, you know, just from my experience, I could tell you that you might go to your physician and you might have high blood pressure at that time. Maybe you're nervous when you go to the doctor's office. You know, maybe you think you're going to get some bad news or whatever. And you could just be having an anxious day, and you're all of a sudden diagnosed with high blood pressure. And then the fact that you've been diagnosed with high blood pressure, now you think you have high blood pressure. Now you've convinced yourself you have high blood pressure. So what I suggest you do is that once you're initially diagnosed with high blood pressure, and if you are given medication, I would begin to self-monitor my blood pressure. And if your blood pressure is in that normal range of 120 over 80 for most people, on a regular basis, prior to you taking your blood pressure medicine in the morning, check it 3 times a day. And if your blood pressure is steady, you don't have high blood pressure. That's the first thing. Sometimes you could take medications that will throw your system off and create certain situations depending on what you're taking. So many people have been diagnosed with high blood pressure, but if you know that you have high blood pressure, the first thing you have to look at is your diet. That's the first most important thing you have to look at is your diet. What are you eating that is elevating your blood pressure? And that's all I wanted to add, Brother Rudolph.
Oh, thank you, Queen. That's
and
right.
Sister Lachelle.
Another thing I wanted to mention, there's been extensive studies done, and I personally participated in a study about 15 years ago that was around black women and high blood pressure. And one of the things that we found in the completion of the study was that a lot of black women did not need blood pressure medication. What ended up happening with a lot of our patients, and it worked very successfully, and I'm not your doctor, you have to talk to your doctor, is a lot of black women retain water. We're still dehydrated. I know it sounds crazy, but we retain water. Our body isn't used, it's just being held. So, you know, you might know sometimes when you're retaining water, when you're feeling a little bloated, you know you're retaining water. We gave those patients, were able to take a water pill, and it decreased their blood pressure because the issue was that they had too much water on them. So the water pill, and some of you may be out there nodding your head right now, bear me witness that your blood pressure was elevated and your doctor prescribed you water pills. Because sometimes that works with some of us, but you have to see your doctor, and your particular situation, of course, is unique because you're unique. But that did work with a lot of the patients that we did in a study of thousands of women, that giving them a water pill helped. So you could be retaining water, you know, so that might be reducing salt instead of taking a water pill. I'm very much against medication. The last thing I'll give anyone is medication. I'll always look for a holistic, natural remedy and or just go to bed. Sometimes we're just not getting enough rest, and it's throwing off everything else. But sometimes it is from too much water on being held fluid in the body will cause your high blood pressure as well. And that the normal blood pressure, doctors are realizing, is actually too high. And so if you have a doctor who's on the cutting edge of research, he'll want your normal blood pressure to be even lower. They're really trying to get even a new normal. So you want to be trying to get your blood pressure to the new normal and talk to your doctor to see what's healthy for you.
Yes,
ma'am. Thank both of you for that. All I'm going to add to that is this. If you feel that you're retaining water, if you feel that your blood pressure is high, if you feel that, and the only way that you would feel that your blood pressure is up is if you have a condition that you have had that before, because a person who's never had high blood pressure before and had it to the level that it has given them that headache or that crazy feeling that you get, that heaviness feeling, if you've never had that before, you wouldn't attribute it to that. But for those people with the bouts of high blood pressure that have experienced that, so you get that pain in the back of your neck, you get that pain in the side of your head, or you start feeling that, and so you say that you think that your pressure is up, what you can also try, remember, the green bell peppers, celery, cucumber, those three in particular, those three vegetables in particular, are natural diuretics. So if you increase those in your diet, they're going to force you to go to the bathroom. And you will be releasing copious amounts of food. I know that for a fact because I experimented with them at a certain point where I was having trouble with maintaining my own blood on the toxic blood pressure medication. And so I had to, of course, also check your weight, your body weight. Maybe you need to lose a few pounds. Losing weight will drop your blood pressure also. So if you're just at that borderline and you're experiencing now over the past couple of days or weeks that the blood pressure is creeping up. Yes, as Queen said, your diet, but then also think about losing a few, maybe you put on a few pounds over the past couple of weeks. Maybe your level of exercise has decreased. Try vegetables that promote releasing water. And again, one of the main things is stress. What are you stressed out about? Who are you around that's stressing you out? And what is it that's causing you to, retain not the water, but that anxiety level that will definitely keep your blood pressure up? Anatomically speaking, the kidneys are the major organs that deal with blood pressure, but the kidneys receive signals. Of course, everything comes from the brain. So it's a chemical thing also, and we can go into this at another show. We can dedicate a portion of the show to hypertension and go through the anatomical, the anatomy of the body, the physiology of the body, and the organs that are involved with the retention of fluid as well as the excretion of fluid in maintaining body blood pressure. So we can do that in the future for you.
Yes.
Okay, well, we got somebody on the phone that wants to speak, so I think this might be an Ohio call, though. So area code 513, your mic is now live.
Assalamu alaikum, Sister Queen, Brother Rudolph, and Sister Michelle. This is Sister Barbara. Yes, ma'am. I wanted to know, if I could, because I was interested in knowing about this blood pressure thing, as far as the blood pressure, the band that you put around your arm, aren't there different sizes they should be using, Brother Rudolph?
All right, here we go. Here's the deal with blood pressure. Everybody gets freaked out about the number. When blood pressure is not just about the number, it's a culmination of a lot of things. The number in itself, the number is derived when the left ventricle of the heart contracts, forcing the blood out of the heart through the aorta and through the arterial system of the body. The pressure that's exerted on the walls of the artery is what that top number, the systolic number of the blood pressure, represents. And it's represented in millimeters of mercury. So if you say it's 130 or 140 millimeters of mercury, that's your is solid, your top number, what that means is that that's how much pressure is exerted on the walls of the artery when that left ventricle contracts, forcing the blood out of the heart. Now, what is a good range? A good range, and when we're talking range, we're talking a wide area of numbers, not one particular number. A range of numbers, again, from a medical perspective, we are taught as emergency medical technicians and as nurses, we're taught that the range of blood pressure, the systolic blood pressure, is from 100 plus the person's age. 100 plus the person's age is a good range of that systolic blood pressure. The diastolic, or that bottom number, is, now, this one is clear cut, and everybody across the board agrees on this, that if your diastolic is 90 or above, you have an issue, and you need to seek medical attention, because that means that your heart is working overtime, and it's going to be a domino effect, creating more problems for you if that is not correct. So I don't know if that helps you out a little, sis.
Oh, yes, sir. I was just wondering, you know, that's why I'll just ask, you know, did it make a difference in the size?
Oh, yeah, the size cup definitely makes a difference, because if the cup is too small, it's already pressure on it before you even start getting your reading, so you're going to end up with an elevated reading. If the cup
is too large, that's why I asked you that, because a lot of places, I believe, use those smaller cups for adults, and they don't realize it.
Right.
People may
and
not
if you
realize
use
it.
A cup that's too small, you're going to, I mean, that's too large, you're going to end up with a false or low reading. Also, what you need to know is when a person is getting their blood pressure checked, you should never have your blood pressure taken standing up. You should never have your blood pressure taken while you're sitting down with your legs crossed. And you should never have your blood pressure taken when your arm is not at a neutral position to your heart. It should never be higher than your heart, and it should never be just freely out there. You're holding your own arm out while they're checking your blood pressure. No, it should be relaxed on a surface that's lower than your heart, and your legs, both feet, should be on the floor, legs not crossed, no kinks in your circulatory system. And, of course, again, the proper size cuff for the individual, and that helps to give a good reading. And also, what time of day you're checking the blood pressure, what the person has consumed prior to them getting their blood pressure checked. Have they consumed caffeine? Have they been smoking cigarettes? Have they just had a large meal? Also, have they consumed drugs or alcohol prior to taking the blood pressure? All of these are factors in those numbers.
Yes, sir. Uh-huh. Thank you very much. And I have a question about the hilly area, and which people live around. Like if they live around a hill with trees, what kind of problem would that possess for people?
A hilly area, well, again, depending on how much walking, climbing, exertion have they experienced prior to getting that blood pressure taken.
Oh, no, sir, this is not for the blood pressure. No, I was moving on with the disaster, you know, the techniques that you were talking about, and I was asking. I should have told you. Excuse me. That's why I told you thank you for that information about the blood pressure cuffs. But I was moving on to, I wanted to ask you a question about if you lived in a hilly area, what effect would, okay, like, you know how they talk about the, you were just saying about a lot of water from the snow, and your wife was saying, Sister Michelle was saying, how the water sets in places. So what about the, you know, the hilly area? You know, just if you, you know, live around an area where there may be a hill, you know, with trees.
Okay, so Yes, ma'am.
Just before you go into the question about the hills, I wanted to just tag back in on the blood pressure. If I could just make a quick comment.
Please.
Thank you. Some of us go out and get the, go to the pharmacies and get those wrist cuffs where you're taking your blood pressure on your wrist.
Yes, ma'am.
The directions for taking it on your wrist are different than the directions for taking it on your upper arm where you normally would take it at the doctor's office. Like Brother Rudolph said, you know, keep your arm down. You want to keep it, you know, want to keep it low. You don't want to have your arm above your head taking your blood pressure. Well, when you take it on your wrist, you some of those cuffs, you have to read the directions. They instruct you to elevate your wrist equal to your heart, like, you know, like you would hold your wrist up. If you put your wrist down on your leg thinking, I'm going to put it down, I'm going to relax, you're going to have an elevated blood pressure reading, and you're going to freak out. So make sure you read the directions on the cuff that you use, especially if you're using those electronic cuffs, and especially if you're using a wrist cuff, because the directions are different on the wrist than they are on the upper arm, and they can give you a false positive high blood pressure, and you're swearing to your doctor, when I'm at home, it's 210 over 110. When I get here to you, it's 180, you know, it's 120 over 80, and the doctor's like, bring the cuff in. So make sure you read the directions. Don't just grab a cuff and assume you know. Humble yourself. Read the directions, or you'll be calling back in telling Brother Rudolph that you're walking around with a blood pressure 310 over 220 and you on the phone. And we'll know that this can't be. So make sure you read the directions.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Well, I had somebody call me in a panic about their blood pressure, and that turned out to be the culprit. Well, they had a wrist cuff. They didn't tell me that. They just kept telling me they were having high reading. So these are little, they seem small, minute details, but they're actually very critical. So, but back to you, Brother Rudolph, and the question about living in hill areas.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sister Michelle.
You're welcome.
Yes, Sister. Ma'am. All right. If you're living in a hilly area, if you're living on the hill, okay, not that much of a problem because water is going to run down the hill. But if you're living in the hill or on the side of the hill, oh, it's a major problem there because, again, that's where the water is going to run when it starts running. So you just have to know at what point you live on and adjacent to that hill, and then you have to just prepare yourself for the inevitable as the water starts flowing. Remember, water always keeps its own level. So if you're on the negative end of it, then it's definitely coming to you, and there's not much you can do to stop.
All right. Well, thank you all. I really enjoy the program. I mean, I haven't been able to get on the, Sister Aziza, I haven't been able to get on your program in a long time. However, I'm thankful to God I'm able to get back on, and I enjoy what I've been hearing tonight. I really do.
Well, thank you, Sister. And please continue to listen and call in and to work.
Sure will.
Yes, and who is that calling in? What's her name, sis?
This is Sister Barbara.
Oh, okay. Yes, my dear Sister Barbara. Where you been? I'll talk to you later.
I know. You're still. Okay. You're still.
All praises due to Allah. Love you, sis. Okay.
Yes, ma'am. Love you, too. Inshallah, we'll talk soon.
Yes, ma'am. Most definitely.
Yes, ma'am. As-salamu alaykum.
Okay.
Wa alaykum salam.
Okay, Sister Lachelle, you remember how when we got the question about the cramps
and the brothers kind of bailed on us, right?
Yes, I remember.
Well, I think it's time for us to reciprocate because I'm going to bail on this one. No, I'm just joking. Brother Rudolph, brother Anonymous, he wants to remain anonymous. Whew. He asked this question last week, and I ignored it, and he told me tonight, I know you ignored my question on purpose, and yes, I did, but he said it's important. So, Brother Rudolph, okay. He wants to know, what is the problem if your wife cannot have an orgasm? Now, shut up.
I don't know. Maybe the brother should leave this conversation. Let us talk to the wife.
You know,
I don't
want to
hurt nobody's feelings. You'll never hear nobody talking about sleep the queen, crush their ego and all of that. Nah.
Mm-hmm. No, I was just getting ready to say, hold on. Okay.
I think
brother.
That's a Brother Marcus and Sister Cecilia show question.
Brother, that are on the line right now, I'm going to say this. That question.
We can help him out. We can help him out.
No. I am going to help him out. I'm just not going to do it in this form.
Would be easier if they were on the line because there's some... It could be medical, it could be physical, it could be emotional, which is what it probably is. But it could be a lot of things that would be hard to answer without other information for me,
right.
Especially from a medical standpoint. I would need more information.
And that's why I'm going to say, if the question was asked from the chat room, can you text that to the brother, text him my phone number and my email
yes.
address. So he can have it, and he can get directly in touch with me, and I can talk one-on-one with him, and I can go through all of that to decipher the necessary variables that may go with that, rather than just trying to answer a blanket question like that.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was reading as he was typing. Okay, he said he thinks it's medical. And let me just say this, and I'm going to shut up. If it is medical, whatever it is, then maybe she needs to go to a doctor and figure that out because I think it would be hard for us to try to diagnose her. But he said he thinks it's a medical condition.
You know what? Ask him how she had... cancer.
He can hear you.
Okay.
And he can type.
Let me know what the response is.
No.
Okay.
He said no.
Emails us at careunit.detroit911@live.com, and I will give him Brother Rudolph's number, who I know Brother Rudolph would announce his number across these airwaves. We're trying to get him to stop doing that. Then people wonder why he can't return their calls. He's getting 2,000 calls a day. So we're going to try to get him to stop doing that. So if you email me, brother, I'll send you brother's number, and I'm also going to send you a number for women's sexual health advocate that your wife can talk to. The sister will not talk to you. She will not talk to you. She only deals directly with women. Not that she has a hang-up with talking to men, but she works with women with their sexual health issues. So she's not going to talk to the husband. She needs to get the answers from the wife, and then she can help.
Right.
So I know
right.
a sister that will love to help your wife. But please contact Brother Rudolph. Give him some more information so he can kind of triage this as a nurse. And after I get that information from him, if this sister can help when I forward the information to her, I will give you her number to give to your wife. But we can probably get you some help from this. But it really kind of depends on the wife, too. I'm going to ask this, and you tell me what he says. Is the wife open to getting some help, or does she want to be left alone? Because, I mean, we can give him 1,000 good answers, but if she don't want to be bothered, I mean, is she open?
Okay, he's typing.
because this is a very serious issue.
Okay, she said that he said that she is not bothered by it. She said this has always been a problem. He is the one that's bothered by it.
Okay, now I understand completely. Okay, I understand. Tell the sister. Tell the sister to send me her number at Care Unit Detroit 911@live.com. And he can send me her number and send his number to Brother Rudolph. I do think this is a Brother Marcus and Sister Cecilia show question, too. And we'll see if we can, you know, put the family head together, see what we can do. But seriously,
well,
send that information and we'll see what we
can
do.
Has she been a victim of sexual assault?
And that's
okay,
exactly
yes.
Why I
yes.
Said,
okay,
that's
the problem
said,
right there. Yeah,
that's
what
why
it
I
is.
Said I would not address it in this forum because we begin to go down the rabbit hole. This is like Alice in Wonderland. We're going down
well,
the rabbit hole.
Let me just say this in case there's anyone else on the line. And you know, we have to keep it real and be real with our audience. And, you know, sometimes those things happen. As a victim of incest myself, I could tell you that sometimes it's psychological. But if a child is molested, depending on the severity or the brutality of the issue, it could be some nerve damage in the vaginal area that may prevent that. And so that is a medical issue. And sometimes it's irreparable. And sometimes, like I say, it's psychological. And, of course, the woman can be in therapy or whatever to make her sexual experiences enjoyable. But I know it can be damaging, too. So there are so many things. But give him the – he wants the email address one more time, please. Care Unit.
Care Unit Detroit 911@live.com. Care Unit Detroit 911@live.com. Ask – well, I'm going to ask. Tell me what he says. Are they registered members of the Nation of Islam in good standing?
No particular religious beliefs.
Okay. Just asking for clarity. But definitely email us. And, you know, I have a couple of different venues. But I do know a women's sexual health coach who is very good. And some females. I don't want you to think it's no funny business. This is not like a sex therapist like that. A sexual health coach who helps women. With these issues.
Where are they from? What area are they from?
What area of the country do they live in?
He's from West Palm Beach.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, don't worry. Yeah,
okay.
Email it in, because this sister that I know who helps women, she teaches on, you know, college campuses. Like, they have her come all over. And she teaches on this, and she has some proven methods that help. But another thing that people don't consider, and it might not even have anything to do with her being abused, so don't chalk it up to that automatically. Oh, she's abused, there you go, boom, that must be it. Not necessarily. It could be, but not necessarily. There's some people that are abused and go on and have natural physical sexual outcomes. But keep in mind, sometimes it can be it could be guilt. It could be other issues on the mind. Even though you're the victim, sometimes the victim can feel guilty. Everyone that gets sexually assaulted or molested is not always brutal or painful or done in a harsh way. Sometimes they're very sensual, and they might cause the young person to feel pleasure in what they're doing. That's wrong what they're doing to them, but they make it feel good even though it's wrong. And those conflicting feelings of, yes, it feels good, no, I don't want to do it, can sometimes cause some things to get shut down. So I don't want people to always think because someone's getting molested, it means that they were hurt. They could be molested, and it could be meant to feel good, which causes sometimes a deeper psychological issue with feeling the pleasure because it makes them think back to the thing that they shouldn't have liked, but why did they like it? It's not their fault if it felt pleasurable. Those pleasure sensors were placed there for a righteous reason, but someone misused that person. So, I mean, it could be a lot of things. They could have nothing to do with that. It could be something totally different. So we're gonna send it to the nurse, and then we're going to shoot it to the sexual health counselor. And that still doesn't mean I might not want to put them in touch with President Marcus and Sister Cecilia, too. But, you know, we're going to give you all the help that we absolutely can because we love you, because you're our family.
Again, this is disaster awareness for community preparedness and understanding that disasters are relative to the individual and what they are going through. This can be a disastrous situation for another person, another couple. And I'm only saying this because most people that are listening, they're trying to, you know, they may be caught off guard right now, and they're wondering, where the heck is this going? We were talking about floods and earthquakes and stuff, and you're talking, well, again, disasters are relative to the individuals and their circumstance. So if this doesn't plague or pertain to you, okay, that's fine. But if there was one brother that had the courage to bring it out and speak about it, there's at least 15 others, their issue also, they just didn't say anything about it. So that, and this could be a show that we can focus directly on down the line, Queen and Sister Michelle. So, you know, let's keep that in mind also, where we can bring Brother Marcus and Sister Cecilia in to this.
And it's such a delicate issue, you know, not only, you know, speaking of the individual, even speaking as a collective, because depending on, even no matter how technical we talk about this, and this can be talked about in a completely technical, aesthetic, textbook kind of manner, someone else might hear the conversation and find it uncomfortable for them, and for them to be uncomfortable hearing the conversation cause them to think because they're uncomfortable that it's improper, and it could cause a whole nother ripple effect of problems or issues. So I definitely don't want to get the Queen's show shut down. But that's why I want the brother to email us.
You know,
we can speak to him more candidly on a one-on-one, or we might have to do our own conference call with, you know, me, Brother Rudolph, the sister, her husband, the sexual coach. You know, we can get some people on the line and have an offline conversation so that, you know, we don't want to get the Queen shut down.
Well, you're absolutely safe. I'm a behavioral scientist, and I've been a marriage counselor for over 27 years. So you're safe. You got it. Oh, go ahead. You're all right.
Oh, praise you.
You're all right.
And that information, I want you to know, that information just registered in a place that, you know, I'm home. Okay, I'm home, right?
Yes, sir. You know, and the whole purpose of all the shows is to be informative. And Brother Rudolph and Sister Michelle, you all have been such a wonderful addition to the show, because a lot of people, what I'm seeing, witnessing tonight, is that even though we want to talk about natural disasters, I think a lot of people, maybe from the initial show, got some very helpful information when it came to health issues. And so because I still have like a dozen or more questions, I don't have nothing to do with floods and change of weather and nothing. It's really all pertaining to health. And I know you and Sister Michelle made it clear that you all are not physicians, but I think you're so well informed. So I think that's
Thank you.
Gravitating to.
And I understand that, and Brother Rudolph definitely doesn't have a problem with it, nor do I. But like Brother Rudolph said, so apropos, I have to repeat it because it was so good. It was so good. I got to say it again. This is a disaster for this brother, for their relationship. This is taking something out of their relationship, and for him, this is serious because he posted this in a chat room on a blog talk show. Like, I need somebody to talk about this. So I think it was very on point that Brother Rudolph said, for someone else, this is a disaster for them. For someone else, you know, this is you know, a life or death situation for them, because it's a life or death of this relationship, because the physical intimacy is an important part of marriage. And when it's part of the marriage, it's like 10%. Don't nobody really think about it. But when it's missing, it's like 90%. So I take it very seriously. And even though we may have laughed to release the tension, we don't take it lightly at all, brother. And I understand exactly, you know, how what you're going through. I really do. I've definitely counseled and dealt with on both sides, the male and the female, because working in a health, you know, field, so a lot of men come in because with the medication they're taking for their kidney or their heart can cause impotency. So it's men who can't perform. And, you know, a lot of men, that's so tied to who they are as a man, because this country, this society is so socialized in such a sick way that manhood and erection, I don't know how they go together. But it really, it messes the men up in such a way that we can barely help them with their other physical issues to evict this first. Like, they need this taken care of first. They don't care about that heart. They don't care about some kidneys. They can get some more of that. They want this fixed. It's serious to them. I mean, I've had wives call in like, I need to pick up that script today. Like, they're not playing. They don't care nothing about the rest of that medication. So it's very serious to people and how they see womanhood and manhood sometimes, and it can cause the death. And a tragic, I mean, if family is a cornerstone of nation, period, and it is, then we want to keep the family together. And if this could affect the family, then we definitely take it seriously. So, absolutely, we will get back to you.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm just taking that somebody would bring something like that to us. You know, that's just huge to me that somebody would bring that to us.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Okay, and we got another question about health, of course, and Brother Jonathan wants to know, how can a man detect if he has breast cancer?
Okay, I can speak on this. Okay. Here's the personal side to it. In 1999, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. Mm-hmm. 1999, October of 1999, my left nipple area got extremely hard. And over a period of 21 days, it went from the size of maybe a little kernel almost to the size of a silver dollar right behind my nipple. And it got so painful that if the water touched it in the shower, it was like somebody was stabbing me with a pin. If my T-shirt touched it, it was like someone was sticking me with a sharp hot object. I went to the doctor. They took a chest X-ray first. Then they sent me to a women's imaging center. And I had a breast exam. Now, right there, I'm floored. I am floored right there because I'm like, okay, I'm having a memory of this is me. I'm Brother Ruler. Okay? This can't be happening. And then I started doing some research. And from the research, I learned that 2% of the male population of the United States every year is diagnosed with breast cancer. 1% of them die every year due to, again, this happened to me in October of 1999. By November 14th, I had the surgical procedure done. They took me into the hospital. The doctor, Nigerian doctor, Dr. Namaka, I'll never forget him, because he was very delicate, very knowledgeable, and very comforting. Because he had to deal with the psychological part with me first, that as a male, I had breast. I was dealing with a breast cancer. Anyway, we go in, they give me the anesthesia,
He doesn't do it. I'm wide awake. They gave me as much as they could possibly give me. Still wide awake. He said, there's nothing else we can do. So what they did is they set up a monitor. They put a drip sheet. And he started with the process with me wide awake. And he talked me through the whole process without watching on the monitor. So they removed the nipple. They removed the nipple. And they took this big suction vacuum cleaner-like thing and just started sucking out stuff. They cut out a big piece, took it out, then they packed it, sewed the nipple back on, and I went home. And over the next course of the next couple of weeks, I had to keep going back, get checked. But then they, after the test week, the lab results came back from the math showed that it was benign. But every 5 years after that, I will say this. We need to check ourselves also. And if you notice any irregularity with your chest, with your nipples, then you need to go and seek medical treatment ASAP. Don't wait on it. And when I say irregularity, you know what's normal for you. If the area around your nipples becomes hard and it starts to increase to where it's not there because you were at the gym and you were doing chest that day, and so your chest is a little sore because you were working the muscle out on the bench, if that's not the case, then you know that you need to go and get checked out and get a real exam done to find out what is going on with no time to I'll stop it there. And I pray that that gives your brother some information.
And thank you for sharing, Brother Rudolph. All praise is to tell God that you're all right.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I'm alive and kicking.
Okay, we have a question from the phone, area code 254. Your mic is now live.
Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam.
This is Sister Chantel calling from Killeen, Texas. I know it's very last minute, but I want to thank you all for having the show. I'm also trained in disaster preparedness and was trained through the Million Smart Movement with Sister Aurelia. I wanted to let everyone know, I have just, not so recently, but just recently become a retailer for disaster supplies. I realized that talking to different believers and even going out into the communities, the question was always, where do you get everything from? So I did want to share that with you all, and if it was of interest to anyone, if no one else, you know, had a direct source, because I was always sending people to Walmart or to any of the camping goods stores to purchase different things. I pretty much have, I think, everything that I can think of. Even the water bottles that are like the Life, I think they're called Life water bottles. It's a water bottle with a filter on the inside, but everything from that to, you know, heirloom seeds, just everything that we pretty much should have for our disaster preparedness and our disaster kits in our homes and wherever we have things stored. So,
Sister?
Can you? Go ahead.
I don't know. You know what we think is zinc. So I was probably about to say the same thing. So go ahead, Brother Rudolph. You're going to say the same thing I was going to say.
It's all right. Go ahead. Talk to Sister. Give us a kiss.
You are. Sister, if you could please email me and send me your information at Care Unit Detroit 911, all one word, Care, C-A-R-E, Unit Detroit 911 at LIVE.com, and we would love to work together with you, Sister. Absolutely.
Yes, we would.
Yes,
we would.
Ma'am.
ASAP.
Yeah,
okay,
do that.
Yes,
you can do that tonight. I'll respond to you tonight, and we can see.
Okay,
you know,
yes,
what? Where are you located?
Colleen.
Right now, I just relocated from the West Coast to Colleen, Texas.
To Texas. Okay. Well, keep working your way. You're almost to Michigan. Keep working your way this way.
Yes. I was almost there, so you know it's never too late.
No, see, you never know. You never know. Come on home. It's Mecca. It's open.
Yes, ma'am.
But yes, ma'am, please email me, and I want to get in touch with you. I knew Brother Rudolph was thinking the same thing. He was thinking it so loud I said it. So absolutely, we want to work together with you. We think,
yes,
and think a lot. So I knew it. When
yes,
I cut
ma'am.
In, he cut in. I already knew where I was going.
Yes, ma'am.
You,
okay,
sir.
I will. Yes, I will be definitely contacting you tonight. I will go ahead and email you. And that's it. That's all I wanted to say.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you,
okay. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, dear sister, for calling in. Thank you. May Allah bless you continuously.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do we have time for another question?
Yes, we do. I'm trying to pick one that makes sense.
Okay. We are running out of time.
Okay.
We
have a sister.
3 hours.
Okay, we have a sister who wants to remain anonymous. She is a registered Muslim, and she says that her and her husband, they have 4 children in the last 7 years. They both want to stop, but she cannot use contraception. So she wants to know, what is the method of birth control for the women in the Nation of Islam?
Ooh,
Sister
Rochelle, this is the time that you can go back to ESPN. And,
oh, no, it's not.
Well, you're pregnant by herself. Brother better be listening.
That's right. That's right.
Keep it real. Keep it real, real. I'm going to ask you, tell me what the sister types. Ask her, is she familiar with common terms that's known as the RISM method? Like counting your days on the calendar, marking your days when you're most fertile, avoiding those days. Is she familiar with that method of natural birth control?
You say, I got 2 children with the RISM.
Okay. That means one of them is not speaking to them. No, really. That's what that means. Because sometimes,
yeah,
and you might find this hard to believe, even though they both are saying today they want to stop, there are times when brothers have paternal feelings and they want a baby. And they may not verbalize, but they want a baby. Even though, you know, people expect it to be on the woman's side, so that goes without saying. But I have 2 children on the RISM method that are 11 months apart. So I know it works. But when you have a partner that wants another baby sooner than the other partner might want you, when you mark those dates on the calendar, it lets both of you know what's the no-no days. And sometimes one partner will want to engage on a no-no day because they really do want a baby, but they don't know how to say it. So first I have to ask, you know, I suggest to you humbly, you know, because this is going into your bedroom and, you know, no one wants anyone else in their bedroom, that you need to really have a come-to-Jesus conversation. You and your husband be sure that both of you are on the same page about not wanting to have any more children, because it doesn't sound like, you know, that on all the days they're on the same page, maybe like 28 days. But it's a couple days where they're not on the same page, because the method does work. As long as your cycles are regular, it works like a charm. But if you're not on the same days, same page on the same days, that's when it doesn't work. But there are some other things that you can do, you know. Women have been doing stuff for hundreds of years, so there are some other things you can do. And I would say email me at careunitdetroit@live.com, because those are not things that I'm willing to say over the air as a modest woman. But if you email me, I can tell you a couple things that work for me, Queen, because I have 2 11 months apart, and the next one is 2 years apart. So I found something that works for me. So hit me up, sis.
Okay, well, you're going to have to hit us, because Sister Queen can't help you with that one.
Oh, man, did you see that shot? Wow.
He's well,
it's not that.
He's watching it like he's watching the game.
No, it's not, you know, you just have to just be
You know, they make condoms for a reason. That's all I'm going to say on that one.
I think a lot of times both people are really not on the same page. I mean, because there's times when I say, my youngest child is 13. And there are times when I say, please, I wouldn't have another baby for the Savior. And I mean it. Then there's other days when I'm praying to that same Savior, oh, Lord, please give me one more baby. I just have one more baby, just one more baby. You know, you just get so in love. You be like, I just want one more. So,
wow,
you know, I think that's what it is. There's some days when you're
right
not on
there.
The same page.
Yeah, okay. No comment.
And it happens to the brothers, too. I hear brothers saying they would like another baby, too.
So the brothers can't pretend like it's not them sometimes.
That was a touchdown. Sister Michelle, would you like to give your closing remark?
Because... well, now she got me thinking.